That's what the Bible says. Learn how to get wisdom and apply it to every situation of your life on today's Wisdom Works Mid-Morning with Lynn Ford and Dr. Mitchell Cruz.
Oh, my God!
I need to get an honorary doctorate. I need somebody to give me an honorary doctorate.
I'll give you one.
So we can say Dr. Mitchell Cruz and honorary doctorate Lynn Ford.
Lynn Ford.
Hello and welcome to February's Wisdom Works Mid-Morning. Each month, Dr. Mitchell Cruz dives into the Old Testament book of Proverbs to unpack Solomon's words of wisdom about the whole of life. And the practicality of this book is evidenced in the topics that we've discussed before, including dealing with difficult people, conflict, and foolish behavior. So check out all the Wisdom Works shows and their worksheets at WBCL.org and click on Mid-Morning. Canine Companion, 11652 North, 825 West in Huntington, is helping to underwrite the first portion of today's Wisdom Works Mid-Morning, and we so appreciate Canine Companion for their support of the WBCL Radio Network. Good morning, Mitch Cruz.
Good morning.
Explain to the listeners what we're going to be doing the rest of the year on our monthly shows, that we do have the freedom to be flexible and veer off and do something else. This is our tentative plan.
Proverbs appears to be one of the loosest put-together books in the Bible. It's got about 1,000 random pithy sayings, but actually it's one of the tightest outlined books, one of the most tightly outlined books in the Old Testament. And it's built around 12 words right up front. I mean, 1:7's the theme verse, the fear of the Lord's the beginning of knowledge, it says there, and fools despise wisdom and discipline. But there are 12 words in this introduction that it's really seems to be built upon. Now, there's one of those 12 it doesn't really mention again, but the concepts are there. The first word there is that we're going to look at is righteousness. I look at them as 12 pearls, and each one is part of a strand. There are four strands of three. And the first strand is the strand of morality, and that's righteousness, equity, and justice. What's right, what's fair, what's just. And today we're just going to look at righteousness. And there's a whole lot of information. We'll just try to make it as applicable as we can.
Before we get into that discussion, I have a couple questions for you. As I was looking at today's worksheet, and, you know, most points have a subpoint or two, and then the subpoints might have their own set of subpoints. And I was thinking to myself, how do you approach studying the Bible? Because my guess is you and I could read the same verse or verses, and I might get a couple of things from it, but maybe it's just partly the way that you're wired, and maybe it's your doctoral background and a lot of things coming to bear. But how do you approach studying the Bible? I always like to ask people how they do that, because, you know, we're all different personality-wise and the way that our minds work. But you seem to get so much from any particular verse that you're looking at.
I think it's the wiring and it's the application. Mm-hmm. I am kind of analytical, which probably seems the opposite of how I relate to people. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what we see here, my uncle, who has since passed away, kind of embedded in me. This was the first thing that he ever taught me when I was at a crisis point in my life. And he was wired that way. He's an attorney. He was a philosophy major. He knew Latin. And so he could help me see the details that are often missed, the pearls that are mm-hmm. often missed. And that was ingrained in me. And then I think with my experience in life, dealing with thousands and thousands of people in transactions mm-hmm. where there's money, and people tend to get a little interesting when money's involved. I lived my business life trying to apply whatever I read that day to my life. And so I see it through probably a little bit different set of glasses than other people see it from mm-hmm. that aspect, right or wrong. And the other thing is, it's a little different with Proverbs because it's a unique kind of literature. But the fundamental principle that's been embedded in me when it comes to hermeneutics, the interpretation of Scripture, is that context determines meaning. Mm-hmm. And so I really give a lot of thought to that.
The other thing is, and I was talking to a friend yesterday about women's ministry and, you know, what kind of event would be effective for women. And I even think of this in terms of mid-morning, because each day we have a different topic and we spend an hour looking at something. And you know, listeners are reading books and they're going to church and they're in small groups and they go to seminars and they go to workshops, and we take in so much information. And I remember John Trent saying that even though, you know, he has great seminars, he was talking to men and women who, when they were ready to leave, weren't quite sure what to do with it all. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I just feel like we're so saturated with information that a lot of it just runs off. Do mm-hmm. you experience that? And my concern is for listeners, especially mm-hmm. today, because mm-hmm. there's so much to talk about, that it may just sort of seep in, but then it, whatever doesn't go in runs off, and then it has no value or doesn't have any impact.
Mm-hmm. I was a straight-A student in high school, and pretty much. And my mom, it's funny, my mom said, it's okay to get a B, they keep you humble or whatever. But boy, did the wrath of God come down on me if I got one from her. So it's kind of
because you were an A student.
Yeah,
that's why.
Yeah, it's kind
you
of
can do
ironic
work.
There. But my dad he was the youngest state senator in the country, and he was a conservative Republican, and he saw often academics as liberal and institutionalized and things like that. And so he kind of put this wall up in me on maybe hindering a flow that's in me to be more academic. Okay. My uncle comes along in my life, and here's the answer to the question. He challenged me to be a lifelong learner, and he said, whenever you take in the information, assemble it in a way that you can remember it, because guess what? If you don't remember it, you're never going to apply it to your life. And so I began devouring books and mind mapping them, you know, where you do the outline on images, using images, and you have flow on a paper, and you can see the image in your mind when you're recalling it. And that's just something I haven't stopped doing. And that's been probably the single greatest gift that anybody's given me in this concept. So in this realm. So what I, Lynn, believe it or not, at one point, all of this was in my head. Because I memorized everything about these 12 words and I applied them to my life. I would say that's probably what's unique. I was probably not going to say anything about that today, but since you asked, that's probably what's unique about my experience with what we're going to see here. There's this old story that J.D. Sumner tells in a song that he sings with the Stamps. They backed up Elvis, and my brother had them come for concerts a couple times. Not Elvis, but the Stamps. And he tells a story in the middle of a song. My brother's done it on a CD for his quartet, where one guy who's this unbelievable orator recites the 23rd Psalm, and then an 80-some-year-old pastor gets up, and he recites it. And there's not a dry eye in the audience after the 80-some-year-old pastor recited it, whereas everybody just thought that was really a nice talk from the orator. Well, the orator doesn't miss a beat. He sees all that, and he hears all that, and he said, I know the 23rd Psalm, but he knows the shepherd. Mm-hmm. And I think what's unique here for me is that I've experienced the shepherd through trying to assimilate this in my life. By remembering it. But the answer is yes, I do think I can experience information overload. I do think, am I even applying this to my life? Is it even changing anything, which is a fundamental thing we're going to talk about mm-hmm. in this topic. And I do understand that. And I think the way through that is to understand it, to be able to do something with it, to put it in your memory in a way that you can recall it, which is one of the 12 words we're going to talk about in learning towards the end of the year. And, the chances are much more likely that you'll assimilate it into your life.
Excellent. Well, the first word is righteousness. And some of you, if you heard the promo, you might have had the same reaction to that as you did when we were doing our show in December on fools. You were thinking, oh, okay, well, I might tune in for that. I might not. I might see what Martha's doing this morning and who's on Regis and Kelly.
Or, take Martha.
Or I'm in a habit of listening, so I'll tune in and maybe I'll get something from it. But I think this is going to be a lot like the Fool study. And those of you, and I mentioned this in January too, and I don't think it's just me. If you missed hearing Mitch's look at the stages of a fool, which was December's show, you really should take a listen to that because it is so applicable to the stuff that you do daily. And even if you've got a difficult relationship and you're thinking, you know, why doesn't this change? And why am I always struggling and doing the same thing? You will see some of yourself in that fool talk and begin to make some changes. So that's on the website as well. But I say that to say righteousness might have that same thought for you when you heard the promo. And
going, oh, yeah.
You know, because when I think of righteousness, my first thought is that which is applied mm-hmm. to me, Christ's yeah. righteousness applied to me. And then the next thought is, okay, so where's this going to go with my decisions in daily life and what I do once I get up and get my kids ready for school and I, you know, I get dressed and go to work or I do whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it is woven into all of our life.
It is. Right before we went to sleep last night, I asked Susan, I thought of her as being a typical listener, and I said, does righteousness mean anything to you? she goes,
is this a loaded question?
She said, we're about ready to fall asleep. She goes, define it. And I said, doing what's right in God's sight. She goes, every second of every day. I said, okay, thanks. And then I told her kind of the 4 points, not telling her. That's why I was telling her. And she goes, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I hope that's what happens to you. You know, I think that when we hear the word, Lynn, it's just what you said. The very first thing we think about is righteousness, something that's done on my behalf mm-hmm. and credited to my account. Thank you. And at the end of the day, on I go with my life. I would just say, what if righteousness was that plus something that was done to you to transform your heart and your life? Now, would you be willing to unpack it a little bit more? And I think that's the message that we're going to see today.
Well, let's get started, because you say that this word righteousness in Proverbs has what you say uncovers 4 patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And they are righteous decisions, righteous talk, righteous strength, and righteous walk. So those are our 4 main ideas this morning that we're going to walk through in our remaining 45 minutes. So Okay. Let's start with righteous decisions.
Okay. First of all, I want the listeners to realize that righteousness is doing what's right in God's sight, but it comes from God, not from my good works, not from the good works of any individual. And that's Proverbs 2:6-9, if you want to read it. But first we see the contextual patterns first are righteous decisions. You know, do you have any decisions, any major decisions in your life? And I've dealt with so many kids, you know, on the verge of making a college choice or a career choice. And I love that. I got to tell you, that's one of the most fun things for me to do. Is it most fun or funnest?
It's most fun, I think.
Okay. So,
but funnest is sort of like the neighborly word.
Yes,
it's
it
my
is.
Funnest thing.
It's my funnest
yeah.
thing. So that's one of my funnest things. Our major decisions, I think, serve us in at least 3 areas in our lives: in our career, and in our community or our relationships, and in our challenges. You know, something big's on the horizon. I got this challenge. And it's so interesting to me that Proverbs equips us for righteous decisions in all 3. Solomon wrote this: the plans of the righteous are just, but the advice of the wicked is deceitful. Wisdom offers us this righteous grid to process our decisions before we make them. And it says the heart of the righteous weighs its answers. The heart of the righteous weighs its answers, but the mouth of the wicked gushes evil. So let's just look briefly at a career, righteous decisions for a career. Righteous decisions, they enrich our careers. I know I actually experienced this in my own life. Righteous decisions for our careers occur most frequently in the midst of our work rather than in our choice of the right profession, even though there's a statistic out that we're going to change careers
mm-hmm.
17 times. I guess it's true. Though the latter carries long-term consequences, choosing the right profession, Proverbs does not neglect the weight of the former, those decisions in our career that occur in the midst of our work. Here's what it says in Proverbs 11:18. The wicked man earns deceptive wages. He earns deceptive wages. But he who sows righteousness reaps a sure reward.
And what's the sure reward?
I think my personal opinion mm-hmm. is that's intimacy with God, because you're not necessarily going to be guaranteed profit. Although I think generally true most of the time that finances are in your favor when you apply wisdom. I've done both. I've been on both sides of the coin, and it worked better for me to apply wisdom to my life than it did to foolishness financially. But I think the win-win 100% of the time that you can guarantee is that your intimacy with God will grow, and typically your intimacy with other people. So life flows inside out from the heart. We're going to kind of unpack this agrarian illustration that Solomon used. So life flows inside out from the heart. That's mm-hmm. Proverbs 4:23. We who listen to this, is really important. Who we are to be determines what we are to do, which determines where we are to go. I call it the be-do-go principle. Who we are to be determines what we are to do, which determines where we are to go, because life flows inside out.
Okay, unpack that.
So here's what, well, we get it backwards. We think that if we go there, we will do this mm-hmm. in order to be that. So we think that where we go and what we do defines who we are. Every guy is like that so much. It's unbelievable. His identity is in what he does. Hey, tell me about yourself. Well, I'm a doctor. I'm a lawyer. I'm a preacher. We all identify everything by what we do. Mm-hmm. That's where our identity is. But who we are designed to be in our hearts is really what's determining what we're doing with our lives. And then the go, I think, kind of needs to be yielded to God. It's kind of the ripple effect of our life. We can't control the outcomes. We can only control the input. So this is what's important for us. It's important to bloom where we are planted. So we need to sow righteousness in order to reap a sure reward, which I think would be intimacy with God. The righteous are delivered from evil desires that stem from an unfaithful heart, one that divides its loyalty. Here's a practical application. One that divides its loyalty between right and wrong, frequently fleshed out in a duplicitous relationship between one's present employer and a potential future one. Have you ever been there where you're getting ready, you're thinking about switching careers, and all of a sudden you start letting go and you don't do your best, and you're not who you are where you are in the company, and so you never really bloom where you're planted. You're always looking at the next thing. Now, there's a gift, sort of, to see in the future when you're leading mm-hmm. people, but when you're not totally engaged in the present, you can't bloom where you're planted. Does that make sense?
Well, it is. It's the Colossians verses that talk about, you know, that whatever you're doing heartily to the Lord.
Yes.
You know, so that means whatever you're doing, whether yes. it's the job that you're being paid for or just something that you're doing on your own at home or whatever, everything is done for that reason, with that in mind.
My buddy Kelly Bird, pastor at Black Hawk Ministries, was the janitor cleaning toilets, and he was really frustrated with it. He's got this big personality, you know, and he was thinking about what he's going to do with the rest of his life. And a guy put his arm around him and he said, "Kelly, just bloom where you're planted. Bloom where you're planted." And I think Solomon is saying, bloom where you're planted and you reap a sure reward. And you rob, what we don't realize, and I've done this before in my own life, even when I own Cruise International, I thought there's something more down the road for me. Hmm. And I would continually kind of detach myself. And then one day it just hit me, I got to bloom where I'm planted. And oh my goodness, all of a sudden that just unpacks all these blessings, I think, from God that we miss. And we never find out who we really are if we don't do that.
Because you think that life is out there.
Exactly.
It's like your life is on hold.
Exactly. It's missing the present. Mm-hmm. So Solomon warned of the consequences of this. He said, "Misfortune pursues the sinner, but prosperity is the reward of the righteous." Proverbs alludes to the fact that the righteous generally have jobs while the wicked often go hungry. You can just kind of think through that. You know, somebody who's doing things that are wicked or not right in God's sight, they're going to run a short course with everybody.
Now, let's stay with that, because when you read the Old Testament, when you read Psalms and when you read Proverbs, there seems to be this message that if you're right with God, then your life is right.
Mm-hmm.
And so even this verse that talks about prosperity being mm-hmm. the reward of the righteous, there are plenty of righteous people that go hungry.
Right. Proverbs is a generally true most of the time kind of mm-hmm. concept. So it is possible. Train up a child the way he will go, and he will not depart from it. Sometimes preachers' kids do go the other way. So that's the first thing to realize about a verse in Proverbs. The other thing to realize is the Jewish mindset definitely saw prosperity, even financial prosperity, as part of being right with God. So there is an element of that.
And their relationship with God was different than ours was. I mean, that covenantal relationship was, mm-hmm. God said, "You obey me mm-hmm. and your life will be good."
Right.
And it was a different kind of relationship that he had with his people of the Old Testament as opposed to us.
Right. I still, however, believe, based on my own experience now, that wisdom applied to career will result in a much better career than foolishness applied to that career.
Sure, that
now,
makes sense.
Now, there might be some people do make it through a career with a foolish behavior and a proud heart all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
But those are kind of the exception, not necessarily the rule. You know, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm, it does.
Okay. And here's the other thing. You know, a lot of people in my position ding a prosperity gospel. One thing that I've seen is if I'm bringing wisdom, if I bring, you know, the whole gospel of God, the person of Christ, his righteousness done to me, mm-hmm. to my life, and wisdom to my life, and I'm at zero, I can't go any lower, there is no question in my mind that things are going to get better in your life. That it's now going to go straight up. There will be prosperity in your life that there hasn't been before. I just think we need to be careful when we want that to be the outcome. That outcome is God's business. Mm-hmm. I can only control the input, and that's why the be, do, go is so important, that I need to have my heart surrendered to Him. I need to trust in Him, win, lose, or draw on what happens in my life, and I yield the outcomes to Him. I can't control the outcomes.
And I wanted you to clarify that, because we're not talking prosperity gospel here.
No. No. You want me to clarify it more?
Is there anything else you need to say?
I don't think so. That's what I'm saying, is that a relationship with God is beneficial to my life. There are benefits of wisdom, mm-hmm. and we're not guaranteed what those benefits are other than deepening my intimacy with God. And mm-hmm. I think as long as we keep that as the benchmark of what we're looking for, mm-hmm. then that's what we're going to, that's, then we have a wise approach to what we're doing. And I just want to say it one more time. Applying wisdom to all parts of my life will result, generally true most of the time, mm-hmm. in blessings that generally true most of the time won't occur with foolishness applied to my life based on the Bible. That's not Mitch. That's the Bible.
No, I hear what you're saying, because mm-hmm. it would affect the relationships you have with other people, with your family, with your friends. Because we've talked about that whole hub wheel thing, the closer you are to God,
yes.
and as others are closer to God, you're closer to each other in that way. You're making better choices about how you handle your money. You're making better. I mean, so it does flow into all of life.
Right.
So I'm with you on that. 26 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock, as you're listening to Mid-Morning, it's Wisdom Works with Dr. Mitchell Cruz. And our thanks go out to K9 Companion, 11652 North, 825 West in Huntington. We appreciate their partnership in ministry. We were talking before we went on the air when you asked Susan, does this matter in life? Does righteousness matter at all in life? And if you've been watching the baseball thing going on, and you realize, you know, it does matter. It matters not just for yourself, but it matters for your family. It matters for your community. It matters for anyone who's ever heard of you. And most of us don't live our lives on that big of a stage.
Mm-hmm.
So our righteousness doesn't have quite the impact as someone else's righteous decision-making or unrighteous decision-making, as we're seeing in this baseball thing. But we were saying before we went on the air that as we were watching the hearing with Roger Clemens and then the attorney and then Brian McNamee next, they're 3 feet apart, and you're saying to yourself, one of those two men is lying. One of them is lying, and they know which one it is. You know, it makes a huge difference. That decision to take steroids or not take steroids has had far-reaching impact.
Big. And Andy Pettit's approach to it
yeah.
has been very attractive. And that's probably, not probably, that is part of righteousness, is mm-hmm. when I am wrong, I turn to the one who is right and follow his path. So we have righteousness in relationships and community. That's really big in our decisions in relationships. Righteous decisions enhance community or relationships. Wicked ones hurt them. Righteous decisions improve our relationship with God and our relationship with others. Wicked ones damage them.
Mm-hmm.
Solomon said this about our relationship with God. The Lord's curse is on the house of the wicked, but he blesses the home of the righteous. Similarly, righteous decisions deepen our relationship with others. Solomon explained it this way. He said, when the righteous prosper, the city rejoices. People are happy. There's good relationships in the community. When the wicked perish, there are shouts of joy. So conversely, the people groan when the wicked rule. So that's pretty clear. You know, righteous decisions will enhance your relationships both with God and with others. Third, then, is challenges. You get a challenge in your life. Righteous decisions guide us through life's challenges. Wicked decisions hide us through life's challenges. Because typically we follow our wicked decisions with pretense in an effort to hide the source of those decisions, which is an unrighteous or an unfaithful heart. Solomon described the guiding versus hiding thing when he said, the righteous man is rescued from trouble. We find him. He's guided, and it comes on the wicked instead. He's hiding in the trouble. Restated, the wicked get punished, the righteous go free. When referencing the challenges of life, Solomon likened the benefit of righteous decisions to freedom and the consequences of wicked ones to a trap. So you want to pause and let wisdom work?
Let's do it.
I would just ask you today, if you're listening, is what decisions are you facing that require righteousness? You know, the answer to that is probably all of them. You know, are you in the midst of making decisions in your career, in your community, or in your challenges? Has your pattern been paraphrased as, if I just go there, then I will do this in order to be that? I would say this to you today. I would say, bloom where you planted. Let who you are designed to be determine what you are to do and where you are to go. And so why don't you just apply this to your life? Just kind of take this challenge. Before you make that decision, maybe that's facing you right now, whether it's in your career, in your community, or in your challenges, why don't you read through Proverbs for God's righteousness before you make that decision and just see if applying God's wisdom, which includes his righteousness, to your life can actually change, be something, change your life and your heart, be something that's done to you, not just something that's done on the benefit of your account.
Define God's righteousness, Mitch, so that everyone's thinking the same thing, because we tend to think of it as doing this or not doing that. So when you say, read through Proverbs for God's righteousness, what is that?
I would encourage you, Proverbs 10 is heavy on it. I would encourage you to look for that word and then kind of just do what we're doing here. You look for that word and you see, well, what does it say about it?
Mm-hmm.
How does that get applied to my life? Oh, it says that the righteous do this or the righteous do that. Ah, you know, and what we're seeing when we see those words is the righteousness of God. We see God's heart become evident in our lives,
okay,
and he shapes our heart to be like his. That's what I mean. And, you know, a similar word would be God's holiness. Holiness is set aside, signified, purified.
All right, the second one, we've talked about righteous decisions. The next is righteous talk.
Righteous talk is paramount in achieving wisdom for the conflict in our lives. See, we want to use these 12 words to move through conflict toward community. We want conflict to strengthen our relationships. That's the whole idea of wisdom. Conflict is two objects trying to occupy the same space at the same time. It's interesting that the solution to conflict is two objects occupying the same space at the same time, and that's wisdom, God's heart, combined with street smarts, the vertical intersecting with the horizontal. Here's what Solomon said about our words. He said, the tongue of the righteous is choice silver, but the heart of the wicked is of little value. Proverbs offers three wise traits for righteousness in our speech and righteous talk. It's real simple. Three H words: honest, hopeful, and helpful. First, it's honest. Righteous talk is honest. Solomon poetically stated, the mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life, but violence overwhelms the mouth of the wicked. A fountain is pure, clear, and consistent. It's life-giving. These are the characteristics of honest speech: pure, clear, and consistent. Contrastingly, the words of the wicked are dishonest. They're mixed instead of pure. They're cloudy instead of clear. And they're sporadic instead of consistent. They are life-taking. I would invite you right now to just think about, are my words honest? Are they life-giving,
mm-hmm,
or are they life-taking? Second, we see that righteous words are hopeful. Righteous talk is hopeful. Solomon described the after effects of a stormy conflict where our words often get us into trouble. He said, when the storm has swept by, the wicked are gone, but the righteous stand firm forever. Amidst life's storms, the righteous are hopeful with their words, but the wicked are full of despair. You know when you're in the heat of the moment and there's something going on and something comes out of your mouth, you think, where did that come from? Well, it came from your heart. After their heated exchanges, the wicked often flee the scene. You know, they're kind of one and done. They're just gone. Solomon went on to describe this hopelessness of the wicked. He said, the prospect of the righteous is joy, but the hopes of the wicked come to nothing. Hope will not come. From wicked words. I've had to think about this in my own life a lot, because I think I am probably hardest on my immediate family, my wife and my children. I think outside of that, unless it's basketball players or somebody who would work for me, almost everybody would say, you know, he's so nice, or his words are honest and hopeful, mm-hmm, and helpful. But there's this high expectation in myself that gets put on those closest to me if we're going to try to achieve a task together. And I thought about how oftentimes the words that come out of my mouth are not building up but tearing down. So right before the sectional, I was alone with the basketball team, and I said, I had a guy in my life, and this is a whole nother show, Lynn, but I had this guy in my life who was an encourager in my life. Not many people realize it, but he was an ABC sportscaster, and he called me once a week probably for my entire life. And there's three really key stories that I was privileged to share at his funeral on what happened to my life because of this one man. But we got to the, I said, I know him as an ABC encourager. And this is what I got to share at his funeral. He was an ABC sportscaster. I knew him as an ABC encourager. And I just want to talk about the B in ABC encouraging right now. And it's building up. Mm. Paul wrote in Ephesians that don't let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouth, but only that which builds others up. So we tend to think that unwholesome talk is like cuss words and stuff like that. Okay. It can be. But what's being juxtaposed in that verse is building up with unwholesome. So if building up is wholesome, unwholesome is tearing down. And I talked about how if we want to have an environment of encouragement, the words that come out of our mouths need to build each other up. And I've been evaluating that one concept in my life this month because of this topic more than anything else that we're talking about. And I'm really, really trying. I even realized how a little tone of voice on my way out of my house today probably wasn't building up.
And how do you get in on the front end of your mouth moving?
Your heart. You've got to think about what's in your heart. I found in my life that if I didn't want to say things that that would tear down people, that I had to get out of the habit of thinking them. Does that make sense?
It does.
And I remember sitting at my desk just clear as a bell thinking through this when something was going on in my office maybe 15 years ago. And I thought, if I don't want to say it, I got to quit thinking it. And so I would give it to God immediately. This is like something can be done to you now. Okay, mm-hmm. God's righteousness. When it was getting ready, when it was in there, I was giving it to God. Boom. Here, I'm giving it to you. Boom. There it is. There it is. I'm not going to say it. Oh, no, there it is. I'm not going to say it. And I started really thinking through, what am I really trying to say? My grandfather, who passed away last year, used to say, when your mouth and your vocabulary is full of coarse words, let's just say cuss words and things like that, he said that's really a sign of a weak vocabulary. You don't know what word to use to describe exactly what's going on. And that has never left me. And I think about that a lot. So I think about, what am I really saying here? How much of this is me and mm-hmm. something I need to be dealing with? And I take that all to God before I ever go to another person. I try to anyway.
And the time in which we live, I mean, I talked to two people yesterday, and both of them have huge things going on in their lives. I mean, and they're just, we're regular people. We were just, ran into each other and started talking about, what's going on. And, I mean, huge things. And what they needed most was not somebody to fix their problem, but for someone to listen to them and to just give them a word of hope, mm-hmm. which wasn't about, hey, it's going to be better,
mm-hmm.
but really directing them to the fact that God is present with them, that he has a way out for them, and that he will make himself known, and to pray that for them. Our world is desperate for hope, and that's what we have to offer in our presence, because Christ is present in us.
It's huge. That's so true. I would say that, if I get a note from somebody and they say, this really helped me, mm-hmm. I'm thinking, well, why? And it's almost always what you just said. And probably every husband, including me, needs to hear that, because we're always trying to fix our wives when all we need to do with our speech is to have righteous speech is just to be that honest, to be hopeful, and to be what we're going to talk about next, to be helpful with our speech, to lift up that other person and to not always try to fix, but to understand and feel first. Righteous talk is helpful. Righteous words are helpful to all who listen. First, they are helpful because they are nourishing. The lips of the righteous nourish many, but fools die for a lack of judgment. That's what you're talking about. When you talk, you nourished. Second, they are helpful because they are wise. The mouth of the righteous brings forth wisdom, but a perverse tongue will be cut out. And third, they are helpful because they are fitting. It says the lips of the righteous know what is fitting, but the mouth of the wicked only what is perverse. Fitting is translated from the Hebrew word ratzon, and the NASB translates that as acceptable, which means bringing favor or goodwill or building up. So let's pause and let wisdom work. What part of your speech today needs to change in order for your words to be righteous? Something that's done to you, not just on your own account. Is your talk honest, hopeful, and helpful? Here's what I think you should do. Ask a close friend to answer these questions. And then exchange any wicked words that tear down others for righteous ones, for those that build them up, for righteous ones that build them up. And I would include with that this idea that communication is 93%, they're saying now. It used to be 85%. They got it up to 93% nonverbal. Everything else but my words. So now after you get the 7% figured out, I'm asking you also to consider your nonverbal cues. Are you saying, I love you? Think about it.
When you talk about righteousness, it's applied to us, but it's something that is being done to us. I want to spend just a little time with that, because even as we talk about having hopeful talk and helpful talk and honest talk, those things flow out of our relationship with God,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so that's the life that we have. And often, you know, we talk about Bible study or devotional time, and the big issue for people is I don't have time. I'm trying to find time for that. And Bible study is different from just being alone with God. But that is really when we talk about wanting to be changed. And even when we talk about like the fruit of the Spirit, you know, love, joy, peace, kindness, patience, long suffering, all of those things. And we think, well, those are things I want to develop in me. We don't develop that in us. That is a fruit of the Spirit. It's in all of us as we become God's kids, and to varying degrees. And it depends on where you are in the depth of your relationship with God. That is the gift He gives to us. So these things are the outflow of our life in Christ.
There's no question. If I weren't trying to keep this short, the worksheet short, it was 9 pages, double spaced when I gave it to you. I would say this, because this is what I would do with a book. This is huge to me. To me, this is what we're talking about. This is the gospel message.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and it's just what you said. But listen to this. The Bible tells us, you know, that this talk should be honest, hopeful, and helpful. Honest. Christ is the truth of God. Hopeful. Christ is our hope. I'm quoting scripture. Christ mm-hmm. is our hope. Helpful. Paul referred to this Holy Spirit as the Spirit of Christ, and helper is used for only one other person other than Eve and woman in the Bible, and that is God, and that is the Spirit of God himself. Mm-hmm. So Christ is this help of God. And so it is very much so when I was saying that, you know, here it is. I don't want to say it when it's right there in front of me. I'm getting ready to say something unrighteous, and I'm saying, well, first it's got to change in my heart, and I'm taking my heart to the alive, living Spirit of God in Christ, and his character traits are coming out of me. I am decreasing and he is mm-hmm. increasing. And that is something that's done to you that changes your life. And it makes you want to be a carrier of the message. You don't necessarily see it as, oh, I don't, why would I go share those 4 ideas with people and have them now be accountable to God? You don't see it as that. You see it as you're going to bring to them a life transforming message that with this relationship with the Spirit of the living God that will change everything about them, their heart and their lives.
Yes. And I say this a lot on the air, but I believe it to the very core of my being, because it's the greatest commandment. You love God, this is all going to come. You know, we struggle over, you know, I just need to read this book, or I need to spend more time doing this to grow these things in me. You know what? Your life in Christ grows that. So it comes from your prayer time with Christ. It comes with reading the Bible, but it comes from talking to him in your car. It comes from enjoying the world that he made. It comes from listening to great music and having your soul sing. All of this change that you want, all this change that is a part of our being ambassadors, being mm-hmm. fragrance, that is what God does in us as we are with him, as we have relationship with him. It's really quite simple. It's really quite freeing to realize we have that one thing to do.
Exactly. And I think it goes back to last month, humbling all 4 chambers mm-hmm. of your heart. Your will, you need to choose to. Your mind, you need to think to or believe to. Your emotions, you need to want to or feel to. And then your spirit, you need to pray to. So you need to yield all 4 chambers to God, and then these things happen.
All right. Number 3 is righteous strength.
Often we're attracted to quickly gain success offered through an act that twists a wrong in an attempt to make it right. Wow. There's some baseball things in there. Solomon warned of the consequences of such foolishness when he said this: a man cannot be established through wickedness, but the righteous cannot be uprooted. True strength is found in righteousness. This righteousness provides both a foundation and a framework that endure. Wicked men are overthrown and are no more, but the house of the righteous stands firm. Proverbs 12:7. The righteousness is not a righteousness that comes from us. Rather, it is a righteousness that comes only from God. Solomon scribed that nothing is stronger than the righteous identity of God, who he is, his heart. And he said this in Proverbs 18:10, the name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous run to it and are safe. This righteousness is available to those who humble themselves and run to the Lord. You know the deal in the prodigal son parable? It's actually the parable of two sons in Luke 15. Mm-hmm. And at the end, the dad runs. That is one of the biggest acts of humility that's shocking the listeners mm-hmm. when he runs to the prodigal, because in that culture, a father would not run. And we have a picture of Christ who's running to us. And he that heart in God, in Christ, is formed in us, and we run in humility to him. Righteousness strengthens us with three things: resilience, relationship, and resolve. Resilience, relationship, and resolve. Resilience. Righteousness strengthens us with resilience, the ability to endure or withstand the conflict. For though a righteous man falls seven times, he rises again, but the wicked are brought down by calamity. The righteous tend to experience longevity in their endeavors, whereas the wicked are more likely to encounter failure. We see that in everything, in sports and politics. And, you know, we just see it in everything. The righteous will never be uprooted, but the wicked will not remain in the land. Proverbs 10:30. Paul challenged believers to resilience when he said this: "And as for you, brothers, never tire of doing what is right." 2 Thessalonians 3:13. I'm thinking about this. I'm talking about it with my 13-year-old daughter in the car, and we're driving by a church on I guess it doesn't matter. Where was I? I know exactly where I was. I think it was either Coldwater and Union Chapel or Auburn. Oh, it's Coldwater and Union Chapel. Yeah. And we're getting ready to turn, and I said, "You see that verse?" I said, "That's what I'm talking about on WBCL." I said, does that say never tire of doing what is right?" She goes, "Yeah, I got to look that up when we get back. That just really fits." You know, and there it is, you know, to have the resilience yes. in the righteousness.
And you rise more quickly, I think, too. You know, the as your relationship with Christ deepens and this whole thing of righteous strength, you're going to fall down and you rise again, but you get it. I think you get it faster.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So it's not just strengthen us with resilience, it strengthens us with relationships. Relationships permeate everything in our lives. I mean, everything from going through the drive-thru at the bank to the most intimate relationship that we have, to anything in business, to sports, to politics. Relationship permeates everything.
Let me just stop you here, because this was so funny for me. I was going through a drive-thru at a Rally's, and I got a Diet Coke. And the guy that handed it to me, he said, "Baby girl, you enjoy this Diet Coke."
How'd that make you feel?
I just started laughing. It was so warm and familiar. I mean, handing me the Diet Coke was like the most important
yes.
thing for him. And he was just like sunshine.
Was
like,
he blooming where he was planted?
It's like, "Baby girl, you enjoy this Diet Coke." And then, I mean, I smiled. I left there with a huge smile on my face. Now, he probably said that to every woman he handed a Diet Coke to.
Yeah.
But it just had this sense of just delight and friendliness and, I mean, pleasure.
Oh, you talk about that. It's unbelievable. And see, you can see how this is interwoven with righteous speech. The
yes.
words being honest, hopeful, and helpful. I had the same experience in the South happen.
Somebody said baby girl to you?
They call me baby girl. No. In fact, she said, "Hey, sugar face, honey plum." She goes, all these words and gives me my meal. I go, "I feel so happy now."
I know.
And I said, I was so down because I'm bald. And she goes, "I didn't even notice you were bald till you said something." Where were we?
Well, we were talking about relationships, because they're everywhere.
They
and
are.
Even one that is short, that will never, I doubt that I'll see this guy again. For the moment, it was powerful.
Oh,
and it stayed
is.
With me.
It does. It's amazing what a difference that makes. And I got to tell you, this idea of relationship permeating everything probably was the most profitable thing to my business. Now, again, the fear of the Lord's the beginning of the wisdom, the humbling my heart to the person of God and then to other people is how this works. I'm not doing it. You can't do it. This doesn't work by definition if you're doing it to benefit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I saw these benefits and I couldn't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
I started calling customers because of a relationship, and I'd let the business part just be a byproduct of the relationship. Oh, my goodness. It changes everything. It's something that's done to you, mm-hmm. not just for you. Righteousness strengthens our relationship with God. He whose walk is upright fears the Lord, but he whose ways are devious despises him. And our bond with the divine is enhanced through prayer, the connection of our hearts with his. I call it being online 24/7 with God. The Lord is far from the wicked, but he hears the prayer of the righteous. Proverbs 15:29. So it doesn't just strengthen us. Righteousness doesn't just strengthen us. Resilience and with relationship, but also with resolve. Resolve is the ability to work out or to settle conflict. Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a disgrace to any people. A nation is exalted with the resolve that flows from righteous leaders. This resolve provides courage to work out or to settle conflict because the righteous have nothing to hide. King Hezekiah's men copied Solomon's wise saying regarding this matter, "The wicked man flees, though no one pursues, but the righteous are as bold as a lion." You know, I've been involved, unfortunately, in legal disputes. And there's something about knowing that you're going to tell the truth, you know the truth, and you know where you stand, that you're so much more confident and you're bolder to talk about. Whereas we juxtapose that with wickedness, which we just talked about, and wicked's always hiding. You know, it's got to pretend and hide. And somebody, like you said, Brian McNamee or Roger, is hiding, is pretending. And somebody is as bold a lion and is telling the truth.
Let me just say one more thing about resolve. And as you're talking about this change in us is really a spirit kind of thing. Because left to our own, we wouldn't move toward any of these things. And I'm not a big conflict person. It's just not my thing. And I'll do anything to avoid it. But I had an encounter with a friend and. We sort of butt heads on and about something, and my friend had done something that was wrong in the relationship, and I said something to this person, and then they shut me out and wouldn't talk to me. And when I said, is there something wrong? It was like, no, there's nothing wrong, but there was. And so I let it go for a few days, and the part of me that would be behaving normally would say, well, let's just see where this goes, and if it falls apart, it falls apart, you know. But I just felt that I needed to do something. So I went to my friend. I said, you know, let's just talk about this. Here's what happened. And my friend said, oh, so you want to be Christian about this thing. Mm. And then she started to laugh. And I said, I do, you know, because it's the right thing to do. And I want our relationship to be right. Well, that's resolve. Before I would not have had the resolve to follow through on something. I would have let it just sort of peter out if it was going to peter out. But that would not have been the Christ-like thing to do. That would not have been the thing, the righteous thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So righteousness isn't always an easy thing to do, but the strength that it gives you to follow through on what is right, even when you don't want to do it, is really important. Mm-hmm. That's a fruit of it.
Yeah, it is. That's powerful. So she wasn't being mean?
No.
When she said, oh, okay, that's what I first thought you meant.
No, she was like, she was like, oh. And I think it was when she said it, she was saying it for herself and for me, you know, and it was sort of making a joke about it because
it was tense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow,
it got the whole thing rolling.
Yeah. Maybe you're listening today and you're involved in your husband's business or you own a business together. I would say this resolve is enormous. Mm-hmm. It has enormous benefits. Here we go again to the relationships fostering in your career because you can figure out how to settle things, how to settle conflict. Between 1 and 3 out of every 100 cars I would auction every weekend would result in a buyer who didn't want to buy or a seller who didn't want to sell. And so I found myself trying to, this is what we're going to talk about 2 months from now. I found myself trying to bring justice on the spot in my relationships and resolve conflict. And it's amazing how these ideas and the Spirit of God developing in me, again, radically transform how I did business.
And being mindful of it.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I knew who to give credit to. Pause and let wisdom work. What weakness of yours can be transformed to strength through righteousness? Would resilience strengthen you? Are you willing to pray in order to strengthen your relationship with God? Are you in need of resolve to work out your conflict? Here's what I just encourage you to do. Block out 5 minutes each day and pray for righteousness. Just 5 minutes and say, God, please give me strength that is evidenced in resilience, relationship, and resolve. And just see what happens. It doesn't, you can fit that in your car, you can fit that in, you know, out for a walk, in your workout, you know, you can fit that 5 minutes in.
Number 4 is righteous walk.
Walk is used by Bible writers as a metaphor for life. The path where our feet take us comprises our life. We choose either a pathway toward righteousness or one toward wickedness. God's desire for us is obviously the wise pathway of righteousness. Characterizing wisdom's connection with righteousness, Solomon said this: thus you will walk in the ways of good men and keep to the paths of the righteous. This path is free of blame and passed on to further generations, which is big when I think about my daughters. The righteous man leads a blameless life. Blessed are his children after him. I've even thought, just did the pause button real quick, I know we got to finish, but if at the end of the day, all my life was used to not accomplish the dreams that were originally in me, but got passed on a relationship with the God of the universe and my four kids, then I think I did what God wanted me to do. Mm. Jesus summed it up. He said, wisdom is proved right by her actions. Wisdom is proved righteous by its walk, is what he's saying. A righteous walk is three things: heart guarded, abundant, and eternal. First is heart guarded. A righteous walk is heart guarded. Solomon wrote one of the most foundational passages in all the scriptures. I say it all the time when he said, above all else, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life. Paul said that when we fully surrender our hearts to Christ, we receive not only his righteousness, but also his prayer-inspired peace that guards our hearts like a military fortress. That's Proverbs 3:9, which is the gospel message. And then he goes on to say it in 4, 6, and 7. Philippians 3:9 and 4, 6, and 7. Solomon described full surrender when he said, righteousness guards the man of integrity, but wickedness overthrows the sinner. Integrity means complete. Integer. Integrity, same root word, means complete. Complete surrender of our hearts to the Lord leads to complete surrender of our past to him. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6.
This could be a whole show in itself, but when we talk about guarding our heart, what does that look like?
I was just asked that about a girl. Oh, I know. It was about my 13-year-old daughter. We gave her a purity ring on Valentine's Day. And Susan said, what Bible verse would you choose to share with her when you give her this ring? Because Susan wanted to wait and give it to her when she had a special card written. And I wanted to give it to her on Valentine's Day so she'd remember. And I wanted, live and in person kind of thing we had going on. And I said, there's no question. It's Proverbs 4:23. And this is what I've shared with Megan, who's farther down the road. Megan, again, your mind, your will, your emotions, your spirit. Mm-hmm. What you think about, what you choose, what you feel, what you pray for. I said, that all precedes what's going to happen in your body and in your life and in your paths and mm-hmm. your walk. I said, so let's determine in advance. Because there's a Genesis 3:16 thing, acts like you're really going to want to be pursued by a guy and you're going to nurture whoever pursues you, right? That's how the ugly guy gets a pretty girl, I say all the time. So I said, let's talk about by whom you want to be pursued, how you want to be pursued, when you want to be pursued, where you want to be pursued before there's ever
a pursuer.
Yes. And a connection of the heart.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of how it looks.
Okay. Heart guarded. Second is abundant. I love the word abundant. It's like lavish.
Yes. And you tend to think of a relationship with God as austere, but it's abundant. Solomon said, the light of the righteous shines brightly, but the lamp of the wicked is snuffed out. A light that shines brightly illuminates abundantly, providing all the light that we will ever need. He proclaimed this, the path of the righteous is like the first gleam of dawn shining ever brighter till the full light of day. The light of a righteous walk satisfies. I think that's what we need to realize. The darkness of a wicked walk dissatisfies. Solomon said this, better a little with righteousness satisfied than much gain with injustice, dissatisfied. He concluded that a righteous walk satisfies with the hallmarks of an abundant life. And here they are. He who pursues righteousness and love finds life, prosperity, and honor. There it is. Proverbs 21:21. So it's not just abundant. It's eternal. A righteous walk is eternal. According to Solomon, it brings life that never ends. In the way of the righteous, there is life. Along the path is immortality. Eternity includes judgment, one that each of us will face with God. And when we do, no amount of earthly success will pay for our unrighteousness. Only the righteousness of another, capital A, Christ, can pay for our sin. Solomon reflected on this. He said, wealth is worthless in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. I was on a fishing trip where that was so evident to me. I was thinking about the beautiful original bronze sculptures in my office. And I thought, they would be good for nothing for me out here in the middle of this lake in Canada, except a boat anchor. And I need to really think about that in my life. I thought I had this kind of little moment with God there. If we reject the righteousness of Christ, we will experience death, eternal separation from God. Solomon summarizes, it's kind of interesting, the truly righteous man attains life, but he who pursues evil goes to his death. Along these lines, he pleaded, when calamity comes, the wicked are brought down, but even in death, the righteous have a refuge. Christ is the refuge. of the righteous. Christ is the refuge of the righteous.
30 seconds for pause and let wisdom work.
Where do your feet take you? That's your life. Do your steps lead you to a click, a smoke, a toke, a binge, a pop, a fix, a fling, or even a self-righteous act? That's your death. Are you willing to walk toward the heart-guarded, abundant, eternal, righteous refuge of Christ? Your life led to his death. His death led to your life. I just encourage you today to buy into this wise strand of morality with righteousness, not something that's just done for you, but something that's done to you. It can only happen through Christ. Like Lynn said, his heart shaped in us, his life shaped in us, because he is the righteous one. When we humble our hearts to him in order to receive his righteousness, he brings wisdom, including his righteousness, to our decisions, to our talk, to our strength, and to our walk.
Dr. Mitchell Cruz, thank you so much for joining us for today's Mid-Morning. The worksheet for this discussion is on the website, WBCL.org, and click on Mid-Morning. Thank you, General Credit Union, with four locations throughout Fort Wayne and Souder Village and Archibald, and on the web at SouderVillage.org. We appreciate your partnership in ministry. Thank you, General Credit Union and Souder Village, for underwriting this last portion of Mid-Morning. Stay tuned. Money Matters is next.